I like to say to people, I've been asked this since Jansen was little, do you know what she wants? I'm like, oh, she makes it pretty clear. Like, I can figure it out eventually.
Yeah, when he's digging through the freezer looking for ice cream, I will figure out what he wants.
Exactly. Well, I mean, aren't you proud of him, though? He got the freezer open. He got out right. What he wanted. He tore it apart badly trying to get into it, but he did it. And I'm like, look at, and I mean, that's the kind of thing I'll take a picture of and I'll send it to my husband and be like, look, like she totally got something out on her own because she had a need. This is huge. Mm-hmm. It's huge.
Yeah.
And I think we're lucky. Not everybody can do that, you know, like that's huge.
Hello and welcome to SynGap One Stories, hosted by me, Ashley Fry. Every couple of weeks, I spread information and awareness about a rare disease that affects my son, Nathan. It's called SynGap One. I chat with parents, siblings, caregivers, and others about the challenges and successes of their journey with someone impacted by SynGap 1. I hope you enjoy today's conversation. Hello, everyone. I am joined today by Suzanne Jones. She lives in Atlanta, Georgia, with her SynGapian Jansen, husband Brent, and sons Wyatt and Porter. Suzanne currently serves as the chair of our board of directors for SRF. And additionally, she has an upcoming event on August 26th. She will be hosting the second annual SynGap Soiree in Atlanta. But that wasn't even your first taste in fundraising. I want to talk a little bit about all of that and how much of a rock star you are. But a little bit later. But let's kick us off right now, Suzanne, by having you tell us a little bit about Jansen.
So Jansen is our sweet 12-year-old. When I say sweet, she's actually a doll, but not all the time. Right now, she's very addicted to her iPad, and we need to work on that a bit, I'll be honest. But when we can pry it away from her, she loves to ride horses, swim, play games, listen to Christmas music day in and day out. And she's become a bit more of a couch potato lately. Really enjoys being in her comfy, cozy PJs on the couch with that iPad.
Well, who doesn't?
Good point.
I mean, it sounds like my ideal Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
For sure.
All right. So Jansen was diagnosed at an older age, and I know that you went through quite a struggle to find that diagnosis. Tell me about that saga.
So when Jansen was about 4 months of age, my mom noticed that she curled up in a little ball instead of stretching out and using her legs and standing on me, and commented on it. And so I reached out to Children's Health Care of Atlanta and was advised to have a PT evaluation. And so Jansen was evaluated at 5 months and was diagnosed with global developmental delay, hypotonia, and an inability to bear weight using her extremities. But at the time we were just told, you know, she's a little floppy and she's behind, so let's just get her some PT. So we did physical therapy, starting at Children's, and we also applied to and were accepted into Babies Can't Wait, which is an early intervention program here in Georgia. And I'm actually very lucky that a friend of mine who'd had twins in Virginia and moved here told me about Babies Can't Wait, because pediatricians were not sharing information about intervention services when I was dealing with all this, which is really disappointing. But so she went from there, and we added some OT. We ended up adding speech and just kept adding all these different therapies and not necessarily seeing a lot of progress. So when she was around three, we started visiting with neurologists and geneticists, just trying to figure out who we should talk to. And we did some genetic testing starting at age three, and it came back inconclusive. We did whole exome analysis, and we were led down a mitochondrial path for a long time and did lots and lots of continued testing. I think we've probably done more than 20 different genetic tests on Jansen at this point. I know. But everything was inconclusive. We traveled the country. Fast forward, she actually started having mini, teeny little eye flutters when she was around 4.5, 5, diagnosed with epilepsy around 5.5. But still, we continued to do different genetic testing. We repeated the whole exome three times and just continued not to get any clarity or answers. And So when she, between the ages of about 7 and 10, Jansen stopped growing. And so her, instead of moving up the growth chart, you know, that little sort of the diagonal line, her diagonal line plateaued and then it petered off. And so she went from like the 50th percentile down to the first and second percentile. And again, no doctors really paid any attention or notice. So when I brought it up with a pediatrician, we started going to see endocrinologists and various other professionals, et cetera. But again, no answers. And so she seemed to be in decline. And so we talked to our geneticist for the millionth time. And I said, I'm going into a panic. Like, I think you're so clearly missing something. I'm totally overwhelmed because I think she's going downhill because she's not growing. Mm-hmm. And, so they suggested, whole genome analysis, which had not been available for very long. And so this was in 2021. And so we immediately said, we'd love to try it. We were told you have literally a 7% chance, if that, to get any answers from this, because you've already done as extensive genetic testing as anybody we've ever seen. And we said, that's fine. And we waited and waited. Yeah, right. We don't care. We're going to try it anyway. We're not going to say no. Mm-hmm. And they found the answer. It's mind blowing.
So that was like 4 months to when was she diagnosed?
She was diagnosed September 13th, 2021 on Brent's birthday. Oh, so she was 1 month shy.
That's bittersweet.
Yeah. Well, you know what? He felt like it was a birthday miracle.
Oh.
Right. But the reason why is for us, we had spent almost 12 years trying to figure out what was going on and why.
It was a long
time. Yeah. Almost 12 years. And while obviously mourning a genetic mutation diagnosis, we were celebrating finally understanding what we were facing and finally having clarity and finally getting to breathe because we could stop searching. And you know, I had taken a break from traveling various places in the country because it was clear nobody could help me, but I had done that in the past. And we were just so stressed because we were like, something is very wrong with our little girl. And we've taken her to all these specialists. Nobody can help us. Nobody can tell us what to do. And we know we're missing something. So for us, right, it was a huge celebration to have clarity and a purpose.
Yeah. And what you did with that purpose was quite phenomenal. I remember we were already diagnosed at this point. And when you came on the scene, man, Suzanne, you'd like came on the scene immediately and with all of the bells that you had ringing. So tell me about those first couple of weeks as a newly diagnosed SYNGAP family. What did you do?
So we get this diagnosis when I'm sitting in Jansen's speech therapy lobby, and I text Brent and I say, what do you think about SYNGAP1? And I don't even know if I prefaced it. And I probably said about with respect to Jansen. And he wrote me back and he said, is this you or a doctor asking? Because, you know, I'd spent forever trying to figure out what was going on with her. And I said, a doctor, this is an answer. We got the genome analysis results. And so he started Googling while he's trying to, you know, leave work, and I'm Googling, and it just made so much sense. And we went to dinner because it was his birthday and basically sat on our phones reading things to each other. But pretty quickly thereafter, you know, I think I started trying to find Facebook groups. I was obviously Googling away, and Brent happened upon Mike's SYNGAP 10. And he actually told me, he's like, you need to listen to this. Mike was on About podcast somewhere between 20 and 25, I think. And honestly, I said, well, I don't listen to podcasts because I really didn't. And here we are. I do now.
And now you're
Now I'm on one. But I actually went back and listened to every single one I'd missed. And we got on a conference call with Mike. And I remember the two of us sitting in our family room you know, with a video up with Mike. And I mean, we were just, it was talk, 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 questions, questions, questions. And I can't, you know, it's such a whirlwind, but I immediately decided, you know, I want to help. And for me, everybody's called in a different way, but for me, I felt like I need to figure out how to raise money, because in order to help my child and everybody else's child, we need money. So, Mike put me in touch with Peter Halliburton to help me set up a fundraising site. And I said, I have absolutely no idea what goal to put here. And he helped me with the goal. I think we said maybe 10 or 20,000. And he helped me build it out, and he gave me some samples and examples. And next thing you know, I launched basically a virtual fundraiser October 1st. So it was literally 2 weeks after Jansen was diagnosed. And yeah, so for the month of October, I was emailing, texting, posting on Facebook, posting on Instagram, and spreading the word that we were doing a fundraiser for SynGap One. And my parents also worked on an email campaign. My in-laws reached out to some people. My sister did. And I would follow back up, you know, it's Jansen's birthday. It's my birthday. Mm-hmm. It's almost Halloween. Like, we're wrapping this up. And it was amazing. People from all walks of my life came out, you know, $5 to however many dollars to support, you know, the fact that we had an answer and that we were trying to fundraise to help research the SynGap1 genetic disorder.
Ultimately, how much did that first fundraiser raise?
So if you include my match and the founders of SRF's match, we were at close to $200,000.
That is incredible.
I was blown away myself. I had no idea.
Yeah. I remember following this campaign over that month, and I was like, wow, they've raised $20,000. Oh my gosh, they've raised $50,000. And I kept watching this number explode, and I was like, oh, who are these people? I'm so glad they found us and that they have like just jumped right in. And to me, that is the most encouraging thing. Like when you see somebody who's newly diagnosed after such a long journey to get where you're at, and it's just like, you know what? We have to jump into the deep end. Forget like, you know, all of the feelings and that comes with it and having waited so long to finally have that answer. And you're just like, you know what? I'm just going to do this. That is so encouraging to me because it took me a little bit longer to really dive headfirst into the world of volunteering with SRF. But man, once I did, it has been incredible. And just watching everybody else who gets that bug to help immediately is so rewarding. And it's going to be rewarding for all of us and our children and our loved ones in the long run. I know that for a fact. And you are one of the reasons for that. But I mean, anybody who's just like, you know what, let's start this fundraiser and just see how much it raises. If it raises $200, man, that is great.
Totally.
That is $200 more than we had yesterday. And it's 200 more closer than we were before. And I just want to encourage everybody who's like, oh my gosh, $200,000. I could not raise that much amount of money in my community. I know that I just don't think I could, but every single little bit counts.
Exactly. And you also, I think my biggest takeaway from that was like, I had no idea if I could even raise $10,000. I actually wasn't sure that mm-hmm. I could. I had no mm-hmm. idea. And you know, it's not even necessarily about the amount of money. It's about raising the awareness
right.
and raising you said, every dollar counts. Every single thing mm-hmm. that each and every one of us are doing matters. And everything you're doing, your podcasts or helping plan the conference, like every little thing that each individual does to help SRF, you know, progress and support our kids is important and meaningful, no matter what it is.
Yeah. Okay, so since we're on this vein of topic, I want you to tell us a little bit about your second annual SynGap Soiree. This is It's going to be on August 26th. Tell us where it is in Atlanta.
So we are having a fundraising gala at the Piedmont Driving Club in Atlanta. It's in Midtown, so in the heart of the city. And it's going to feature a cocktail reception, a sit-down dinner, a program that'll have a live auction, a Fund the Hope portion, and a bit of a sort of a emotional appeal to people. We're going to feature a video and some speakers. And Mike's supposed to be our keynote. And
oh, that'll be fun.
I know. And we have a live band and a pretty venue.
Oh, that's going to be great. Tell me, do you know how many people you expect this year?
So this year, since we've decided to have it be seated and kind of more focused on, you know, the program, we're anticipating up to 300. Last year,
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's going to be crowded, but last year,
that's okay.
Yeah, well, as long as everybody has fun. last year we it was more like 375, but we just can't have that many. Yeah. So it should be a fun
night.
That's
incredible.
That's
incredible.
Well, fingers crossed it doesn't rain. We need to be able to use the outdoors despite the excruciating heat.
Yep.
We've been researching mm-hmm. what time the sun sets and the average temperatures in August, and it's not cool.
So not black tie necessarily.
No, but it is due to the event space. It is coat and tie required.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us how people can register if they want to join. Like I want to join.
Please do. Our website is syngap.fund. I guess it's /soiree. We have tickets available online, sponsorships available online, and donation opportunities available as well. And you can get to our Fantastic. Website either by going through the different, you just Google it, or through the SRF mm-hmm. website, or again, syngap.fun/soiree.
Yeah. And we will put a link in our show notes for you too.
Thank you.
Yes, of course. I want to try to get myself to Atlanta. I'm not too far away, and if I can make it happen, I'm going to try my hardest.
You're invited.
Oh, everybody's invited.
Yes, we have. Everybody is invited. We have at the Thompson Hotel in Buckhead, Atlanta, which is about 10 minutes up the road from Midtown. We have a hotel block. And what's really neat is that we have 4 other SynGap families who are hosts with me for the soiree. I have a bunch of hosts.
Great.
4 are SynGap families. And honestly, I met 2 of them at the event last year.
And oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. It's super amazing. One I'd already met before then, and one I actually knew even before. We just didn't know that Jansen had the same disorder as her son. But that's been really nice for all of us to get together and for our families to start meeting. So we're looking forward to a good night.
Something that Nathan has been around a couple of other SynGapians, but so living in the same town, that's got to bring so many more opportunities. Has Jansen been around some of the other SynGapians more than a handful of times? How have those interactions gone?
I would say not more than a handful of times. It's more us moms trying to get together. They're all, you know, different ages, different sexes, mm-hmm. and different abilities. But I think all of us ladies like to try and get together and share stories. We also don't all necessarily live right near each other. But we just had a newly diagnosed family last week who lives right near me. So, and who has a 13-year-old daughter. So it's exciting. Like the 350-ish of us is such a drop in the bucket of how many more of us are out there, for sure.
You're absolutely right. Wow. That's incredible. I know I keep like crossing my fingers that another SynGapian will be diagnosed in Oxford, Mississippi. Because I think, well, I would hope to not smother that person in that family, but I feel like all I want to do is just like come into my realm. I want to be in your circle. So I probably need to like turn that down.
I'm pretty sure that I might be overwhelming the new mom that just rolled in. And if you're listening, hi, Holly.
Hi, Holly. Can't wait to meet you.
I know. But it's been great because I will say there are people you can talk to who get it. We all have different situations, but every single time I talk to any of them, they get it. And that's really a treat for me.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And honestly, so Suzanne, you and I met for the first time at the conference last year, and immediately I felt a connection with you, not unlike other parents who I had been meeting, but you and I just really, we really connected.
We did.
And you're somebody who I tried, I don't often enough, but I try to reach out and see how you're doing and, you know, just check in. I feel like you and I understand each other, and something that, we were very candid about just real early on is how hard it can be. And also understanding, like putting it into perspective, like both of our children are fairly mild and not as severe as some of our other Syngapians in this community. And you know, it is so hard almost every single day to live with this diagnosis and to connect with somebody who has a shared experience, who doesn't judge and who can commiserate with you and also know, like, you know, we have it pretty good. If you look at the grand scheme of things without comparing one family to the next, that's something that we just can't do in this community. It's not fair to any of us. But for you and I, we were really able to, we got very real.
Well, I think that's part of our bond is that we're both wide open.
Yes.
When it comes to just, you know, I think you're more outgoing than I am, but when it comes to being willing to just share what's going on, I'm not hiding anything. What you see is what you get. And this is a very real and raw experience that we are all living. But I think you did hit on something that, you know, with the spectrum of the disorder, it has been very interesting and intriguing to see people's children and to hear about different journeys and stories and to understand that we all have very different trials and tribulations. But at the same time, what I think is really neat is that they're in the same realm and we all still love each other and care. And that's one of the things that I've really enjoyed about going to the conference and meeting people like you and feeling like we're family, and then going to the end project and have been participating in the natural history study. And when I saw two other moms there, Stephanie and Marta, well, I'd already met them both. I've been on calls with them both. I have been in meetings with them both, and I saw them both at the conference. So I felt like it was old home week, you know? I mean, it was so exciting. And it was neat to get to see their girls. And, you know, the girls didn't all get to interact much because we were getting ready to be in 6 hours of meetings or doctor's appointments. But it just very much, it's comfortable. It feels comfortable. It feels like everybody cares. And despite the fact that Jansen's maybe doing more than another child, we're still facing challenges that are relative to each other. So we can still talk about it.
Right. I 100% agree.
And, you know, something else that's interesting that has struck me a lot recently is because some of my, you know, pals have younger kids, one in particular, Natalie, who I talk to all the time, who's helping me a ton with the soiree. And we chat about how, you know, what our little girls are doing or not doing. And I can't even remember when Jansen was 5, to be honest. I can tell you for a fact that she speaks, because she does speak now. It is still disjointed and a couple phrases at a time versus an actual conversation. And there's lots of dropped words and such. I know it's exploded compared to even last year, but I can't really remember anymore. Like at 5, did she have 10 words? Did she have 5 words?
Yeah.
I don't remember. You know, but I know that she's progressing. And I think all of our kids in their own way are progressing, and that, and it's all of our goals, I think, to keep helping them progress in their ways that works for them.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that the other day too. I had someone who hadn't been around Nathan in about a year, and we recently went over for a pool day, and he said, you know, Nathan's doing really, really well. And I kind of looked at him like, really? Like, where have I been? Huh? Where have you been? I don't know. Like, really? But I mean, I guess like with any other child, it's hard to see the day-to-day progress and to conflate. I mean, you just can't see the incremental improvements and changes. But when you stop and look back, if we could just take a snapshot, like if I had on my phone the same way that I do my memories, my picture memories for, you know, like milestones and just like, here's where Nathan was at 10 years ago, you know, or 2 years ago, that would be really cool to look back, because I feel it just all blends together, you know, as a parent, as a caregiver, it does blend together. And so seeing those big steps of improvements is difficult when you're living the day to day. You're exactly right about that.
Well, and it's also hard to remember at times to celebrate those improvements that are probably seemingly minimal, especially for a neurotypical family. But it's hard to remember to celebrate those, one, because they're technically maybe somewhat small, but two, because what's been hard for me at times is the older Jansen has gotten, the further the gap has widened between her and her neurotypical peers. And so the heartache and pain can be a little tough to navigate with that going on. So you have to tell yourself, wait a minute, but she just did X. I mean, and like the amazement.
She's not on the same path.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. The amazement that you have about X. I will say that story about the story written up about the plane that landed in Holland when you thought you were going to, I don't know, Italy or somewhere, that really resonated with me.
Yeah. This also reminds me of something that my dad said early on after we learned of Nathan's diagnosis. I was like, he's not going to do this and he's not going to do that. And my dad said, but Ashley, you are putting expectations on him that no longer fit his capabilities. And I think he used that specific word, capabilities, and not disabilities, because it really made me stop and think like, oh yeah, you know, he is going to live his best life. And even though it's different than what I expected for him, he's not going to know any different, and he's going to love every moment of it. I mean, if I were to ask him, what would you do differently? I don't think he would do a damn thing differently. You know, Nathan loves his day-to-day life. And I don't think that he necessarily cares that he's not like his brother or like his peers. I mean, he's doing his best and he's learning things and he's on his own track.
Right.
And for me to try to say, it is hard. It is so hard to watch that gap widen. And even though he's still six, you know, I already see it widening year by year from his peers. He's just not on their path. And when I can convince myself that that's okay, I feel a whole lot better about his outlook and the track that he's on, because right now I can't change it and I can't put him on that path yet, but he's happy on the one that he's on. So I've got to be happy about that too and just support what I can.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me about Jansen's typical day. What does it look like? Does she go to school?
She does go to school. She is in a private school right now that follows a traditional K-12 curriculum, but it is for children who learn differently, and they have different tracks for different kids, and it's a very, very small class size, like under 10.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. And I think they definitely meet her where she's at. And I don't know where we'll be next year. I don't know what the future holds. But for now, we are going to go back to the same school she was at this past year. We're repeating, I suppose you would say. I hate this grade thing, but she's repeating fifth. And it hurts my heart when people ask her what grade she's in, because she just turns and stares at me, and she gets it enough to realize that there's an answer, and I have to start talking in circles. She should be, you know, should technically be. And I'm like, well, what are we talking about? Are we talking about, you know, age-wise, she should be going into seventh, you know, according to this school, we're going into fifth. And then academically, I mean, I don't know, 6 years old at a good day. It was it's interesting, you know, like it is what it is. But for now, she's hanging in there at this school. And at some point, I think we'll need to reevaluate. It does frustrate me that we don't have access to all of the therapies that we had access to at our last school, because they allowed us to bring in private technicians, and we can't hear. And so we're missing out on therapies right now. And it is 45 minutes away in a different town, because that's the way things work when you are trying to find a school that fits a child that doesn't fit any anything that anybody's ever heard of. So we're very lucky to be in a big city where there are a lot of different schools for all different kinds of people, but it is definitely a little dicey to figure out a school for a moderate Syngapian. So we'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is your second year at this school?
I actually think this will be our third. We were at another private school before that had an even smaller class size that I absolutely loved, but I didn't know, because we had no diagnosis, I didn't understand why she wasn't making any academic strides. And she just kept, you know, we were just repeating and repeating and repeating. And now I know, it was an excellent school and they were doing the best they could with what they could work with. So, you know, you live and learn, but it also never wouldn't have worked forever, because like I said, the older she's getting, things are getting harder. And so we're going to just keep having to figure out what's best for her.
And you said that her therapies aren't really happening in the school setting. Is she receiving therapies right now outside of school?
So there is a little bit of, some speech at her school through an in-house person. It's just not the amount that I would like. And truth be told, we were doing outside speech until last year, midway through the year, when we were fired. Yeah, sure were. That's okay. I wasn't a big fan of hers either. And that's what's tough too, is because, you know, you want to get them all these services, but it's so hard to find people who, you know, they love and relate to and who you actually think are making an impact. And so, and we're talking about somebody who had, you know, a zillions of hours of therapy a week back as a little toddler. So I've gotten a little tired in my old age. So we are taking a break, but I do want her to kind of pick back up on the speech and the OT to some extent. And she is still doing therapeutic horseback riding, which she absolutely adores.
Yeah.
And she she has a very, very strong connection with all animals, all bugs, all anything, but adores horses. And it is truly amazing to watch her riding, because I am terrified of horses and I can't ride, and she can do way more than I can on a horse. It's cool.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And at some point, behavior has become a huge problem that's getting worse and worse and worse since we got fired. So we're going to working through an autism diagnosis and getting ABA therapy help, easier said than done, even in a big city. So I have a lot of hurdles to face, but definitely facing the challenge right now of needing a little bit of help with her and help figuring out how best to handle behaviors. In particular, I need help in terms of caregiving. And she has figured out if she misbehaves that I have to reappear. And so, and she's figured it out to the extent that all these people I keep trying don't come back. We're in a bit of a pickle right now.
Oh gosh. I'm sorry. Well, I know you'll figure it out though. You are so resourceful.
Yeah. Well, for now, honestly, we'll
find the gym.
Right. I hope so. It's been a few years, and honestly, because it's just, I've lately I've been pretty okay just not doing anything without her or going out after she's asleep because my teenage boys mm-hmm. can stay at home once she's asleep. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to travel as a family. It's hard to travel without her. It's hard to, I'm going to have to figure something out. You're right. Easier said than done though. I think that is, mm-hmm. I think finding caregivers who your children love and adore and who you feel comfortable leaving your children with, especially the older they get. And it's just that to me is very challenging right now. And that is, that's where I'd really like to focus.
Yeah. Is she on any medications right now?
She is on, two seizure meds. One is Depakote Sprinkle, and she's been on that since she was five. And one is Sympazan, which is an oral film proxy of clobazam. And you know, she has never had zillions of seizures. She just has, she's had some. They are managed, and so now we're just kind of status quo with the medicines there. We've talked to the doctors a bit about more meds. Well, sometimes she uses melatonin at night, and I think we have to give her vitamin D probably because she never goes outside because she's a couch potato. And we do some Miralax sometimes.
What do you do to make your life easier, and how do you give yourself a break?
So I would say that it's not in my wheelhouse to focus on self-care. It's on the to-do list. Might need to ask me that again after the soiree. The last 2 years, honestly, I don't think I've stopped because I have been so excited to finally understand Janssen and to focus on something new and different. And it's rewarding for me to be so engaged with SRF. But it's also, it's just so nice not to be stressing and focusing on every last going doctor and should I do this and should I do that? Instead of focusing on working with an amazing community. I'd much prefer that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. What is at least one thing that you are proud of Janssen or something she has accomplished in the last year?
In the last year. Well, I think I referenced a bit ago that her speech, her expressive language really seems to be taking off. This year in particular, I just have noticed here and there that she will speak before she's been spoken to. And that is shocking.
That's great.
Oh, it's amazing. Like literally these things that nobody else would even notice. You're just like, wow. And every now and again, she'll say some little, you know, say 3-word phrase, but whatever it is, will be, you know, interesting or a word is in it that I can't believe she used. And I'll text my husband or call my husband because it's just so cool. You're like, there's something going on in there. And she's actually trying to communicate. And as a lot of SYNGAP parents know, I mean, so many of them still just want to hear the word mom. And I remember when I heard the word mom, whether it's through an adaptive device or these few words that she's now using, communication is huge. So that's been really exciting for me just to feel like I'm getting a bit more out of her. And it's still frustrating for her when I don't understand. She gets very angry when I have no clue what she's talking about or because I can't understand her or because, you know, it's not always all that articulate or because she says something and I have no idea what she means. She gets annoyed, but still, I think a lot of SYNGAP parents would agree that a form of expressive communication is huge, be it adaptive devices or pointing or whatever. I like to say to people, I've been asked this since Janssen was little, do you know what she wants? I'm like, oh, she makes it pretty clear. Like I can figure it out eventually.
Yeah, when he's digging through the freezer looking for ice cream, I will figure out what he wants.
Exactly. Well, I mean, aren't you proud of him, though? He got the freezer open. He got out right. what he wanted. He tore it apart badly trying to get into it, but he did it. And I'm like, look at that. And I mean, that's the kind of thing I'll take a picture of and I'll send it to my husband and be like, look, like she totally got something out on her own because she had a need. This is huge. Mm-hmm. It's huge.
Yeah.
And I think we're lucky. Not everybody can do that. You know, like that's huge.
Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah. I know. As frustrating as it can be, because we have ruined everything in the freezer before by leaving the door open.
Oh, details.
As frustrating as that can be, that's replaceable.
Exactly. But I do think that we have to celebrate those little things that they do that typically people wouldn't even notice. I think it's amazing he opened your freezer and left it open. I think it's great.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Tell me one piece of advice that you can give to other SYNGAP families about how to live a happier life with SYNGAP.
Let me think. Well, I think we've kind of talked around it a bit throughout our conversation, but I just feel like really working hard to modify your expectations for your family, and it's easier said than done, but you really have no choice to change kind of how you approach travel or dinner out or even dinner at home, family activities. Everything you do is impacted by your SYNGAPian. And so you kind of have to embrace it. And we have. And, you know, sometimes we have to get, if we happen to be going somewhere where we need to stay in a hotel room, we know you better have two with a door, because we need to be able to block her off at 7:01 because she has a very strict bedtime, you know. And does that mean that maybe we can't travel if we can't afford it? Yeah, sure. Or does it mean maybe we aren't staying with everybody else that we want to be with? Sure. But you just have to make these accommodations to make it more pleasant once you're there. And the same goes for dinners out for our family. If we want to go out to dinner, we better go at 6. You know, if we want to eat at home, she's eating at 6 because we're trying, because she needs a ton of sleep. She, despite being almost 13, she goes to bed around 7. She sleeps. I mean, not always through the night. We have issues like everybody else, just not, you know, we don't even want to go into the fact of that. I don't sleep in my own bedroom. That's an issue I need to deal with. But she sleeps a strong until 6 or 7 in the morning on a typical day, if not longer. I mean, that's a 12-hour night. The child needs sleep. Yeah. And therefore that's important to us. So, you know, I feel like you got to make modifications, and you might not want to, but you might as well embrace it because you're going to need to. Because that will make anything that will make things calmer and more peaceful and keep your precious little SYNGAPian from having a complete meltdown, well, I say do it. I'm interrupting you, but even if others disapprove, if I have to sleep in the bed with her, then I will. I want sleep too. Mm-hmm. You know, like whatever it is, I don't care what people think. Like, we're doing the best we can. Period. End of story.
Yep. Wholeheartedly agree. No judgment. I live in a judge-free bubble. And if you judge me, you are not in my bubble, and that's fine, but don't pop my bubble.
Right.
You mentioned something about like making modifications and like going out to dinner. We really don't go out to dinner anymore unless we're going to a Mexican place, because they bring chips and salsa and dip, and like that will entertain them until the food comes. And it's usually pretty quick. Whereas if we go to like any other restaurant, just sitting and waiting and trying to keep him in his seat without, you know, terrorizing everybody, including us. And like, so Mexican, we eat lots of Mexican out.
Absolutely. Well, we go to a place nearby where Brent took her out and was hitting golf balls with her. We go to another place near, go to another place nearby where they allow dogs. We bring cards like Uno or different games. And of course there's that awful iPad in tow a lot too.
judge free.
And let's be, that's the thing too. I mean, it's not like I, approve of everything I'm doing. I don't think she should eat Chick-fil-A all the time because I'm trying to get seizure meds in. I do. I let her. Mm-hmm. I don't think the iPad should be attached to her hip, but I'm trying. I'm doing my best.
Right.
There's plenty. Right. I don't necessarily approve of. The old me didn't approve of, and the new me really doesn't either, but you know what? It works. So.
Right. And there, I think we all learn very quickly which battles we can win with our Syngapian and which we cannot and which are not worth it. And so just like having that awareness, both of our Syngapian and of ourselves, allows you more confidence and ability in the moment. And honestly, like, again, no judgment, right? Like whatever you need to do to get through the day, to get through the week, to get through the year, do it. And yeah. Don't hold back. Don't feel bad, period.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I'm still trying to think of, like I mentioned, looking into more behavior help, et cetera. I mean, I'm not resting on my laurels, but I have to give myself some breaks.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Suzanne, I know how busy this time of year is for you preparing for the soiree and with all of the responsibilities that you have for SRF. So I don't want to take up any more of your time, but I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed chatting with you and how excited I am to see you very soon.
I know, me too. Thanks so much for having me, Ashley.
Yes, of course. We will talk to you soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and like us wherever you're listening. For more information about today's guest and Syngap One, please check out our show notes. Your suggestions are always welcome. Please email us at ed@curesyngap1.org.